us down the rabbit hole.
The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
As we explore the odd and esoteric.
If my answers frighten you, then you should cease asking scary questions.
This is the AU Radio Underground Files.
Up into the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's the Underground Files secret spy satellites, hovering silently overhead and monitoring your every thought. So make sure you remember to love this podcast. Or else. Joining us here tonight is the celestial body holding our little cast together. It's Joy.
Hey.
He believes.
Sparkle, sparkle.
He believes in gravity. He just doesn't agree with it. It's Hal.
Marshall, come on.
I'm sure he wishes he was recording from a secret moon bunker instead of his garage in this weather, but thanks for being here anyway, Travis.
It's good to be here.
I'm Hannah.
Wait, I didn't get an invitation to the secret moon bunker.
None of us did. Travis hoards it all for himself.
Must have got lost in the mail.
Darn it.
And if you didn't guess, this week we're talking about space.
Space.
And I'm so excited. Space is like one of my favorite topics. Especially for weird conspiracies.
It gets pretty funky, that's for sure.
There are so many of them.
Well, I mean, it's you know, the last frontier. It's one of the last great unknowns, except for the depths of the ocean, which
I was gonna
still
say.
Boggles my mind that we haven't probed, but another time.
It's even harder to get to the bottom of the ocean than it is space, which is still baffling to me. But we can save that topic for another day.
Maybe drowning is scarier than suffocation? I'm not sure.
I mean, have you seen some of the deep sea creatures? I feel like the fear is justified.
True that.
But some of them are adorable.
That
in creepy.
That's fair. I mean, the little like, Dumbo octopus thingies. Those ones are...
Yeah.
But we're off track. We're not talking about deep sea. We're talking about the other end of the spectrum.
I immediately derailed it. I'm sorry.
We'll bring it back around. Space whales.
I've seen stuff talking about space mermaids before. I want that to be a thing. People, you need to make it a thing.
I'm just saying, space whales. How cute would they be?
Just reminds me of Courage the Cowardly Dog in the Space Squid episode.
Oh, God.
It was the saddest.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
The first time I watched that.
I forgot about that.
Oh, space squids. Thanks, I didn't need the feels today. But, hey, so anyway, I'm going to start us out with the Apollo 10 mission. And I don't know if you guys have heard about the Apollo 10 mission, but when the astronauts were preparing to land, they had to do a test of the communications between the command mod and the lunar lander. And so in order to not have interference from NASA, they went to the far side of the moon so that they could just communicate with each other. So there was this moment of complete communication loss between Earth and the astronauts. And during that time, they heard space music.
Whales.
Whales. And it does actually kind of remind me of like electronic whale song. If you listen to the audio, it's this like woo kind of sound.
So you mean space whales.
Space whales. It's space whales.
Absolutely space whales.
This is one of my favorite like space anomalies that has happened. It's since been attributed to, you know, by the government. They've attributed it to, it's a phenomenon that can happen when radio waves interfere with each other when they're in the same transmission path. So they were saying that the two pods, because they were on the same radio frequency, were creating this small feedback loop.
A likely story.
A likely story, which is exactly what I wrote right there, just likely story. But it's really interesting to listen to the audio tapes of the mission. Because even if there is a mundane explanation later, during that moment, you can tell that the crew of Apollo 10 is freaked out. They're like, what is this sound? Where is this coming from? We aren't communicating with NASA, so we have no idea where this weird noise is coming from. Do you guys hear that? Do you hear that? Are you guys listening to that? Like, and I love stuff like that. Like, even if the explanation ends up being really mundane, like, oh, that's just something that happens with technology.
Mm-hmm.
it's still so neat that that is a phenomenon that we picked up in a recording.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is, I mean, we covered like the secret moon base theories when we did our Moon Nazis episode, but that was one of the things that helped spawn the idea that there was something on the far side of the moon. And that particular transmission was used multiple times to say that it was Nazis. It was the U.S. had built something there, that Russia had done it, that it was aliens. But the Apollo mission was the first concrete proof that was used by conspiracy theorists to say that there was absolutely something there and that we had recorded it.
I mean, I'm still not entirely unconvinced about the hollow moon theory. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if Travis' secret base was just the entire inside of the moon.
It's just my basement.
It's the space whale garage.
Yeah.
It's where they
need a big bay.
It's where we park the AU radio satellites.
Right.
We have more than one because we're classy.
Because we're classy. So, Joy, do you have some fun? I mean, I have some more space stuff, but I figured I wouldn't take up the entire thing talking about stuff.
So we do. So both of them are post-World War II, and both of them involve President Harry Truman. But one of them that kind of grew out of a lot of the stuff going around was the Majestic 12, or the MJ-12 organization that several people claimed were a cover-up for Roswell and a lot of other things. But basically, these documents kind of floated around in the 80s that supposedly showed like a government organization that was involved with hiding stuff that was happening on the moon, stuff that was happening with alien bodies that we had found, and things like that.
Which is super cool to me.
Yeah.
But also, like, in recent years, with more, like, world governments coming forward and being like, oh no, we actually have been studying UFOs, lends a lot of credence to those kind of things.
It makes you wonder.
Yeah, so supposedly in 1952, a secret committee of 12 individuals were convened by President Truman to explain and hide the crash of an alien spacecraft at Roswell. And basically, it was supposed to, these 12 individuals were supposed to be studying the recovered alien technology and then come up with a plan for how we should engage with extraterrestrial life in future contacts. Most, in 1996, most of the documents were proven to be fake, but they were really well done. And it was probably one of the best hoaxes that ever came out. There were a lot of UFOologists that really actually believed, not just conspiracy theorists, but people who are actually like involved in debunking stuff, who really believed that most of them were authentic. So everything from a bunch of memos from Truman to later on, it was the document in 1996, which was the MJ-12 special operations manual that really kind of broke it wide open, because that one apparently was not built as well as some of the other documents were. But that's where they started to see some inconsistencies, and they began to be able to see where some of the other documents were obviously actual documents that had been cut apart and like pieced together.
Huh. I mean, props to the commitment.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of reminiscent, like the crop circle hoaxes and all of that kind of stuff. Like, I applaud your commitment to the hoax. Like,
take some major effort for some of that stuff.
Like, major effort. but then the tinfoil hat person in me always kind of wonders if these hoaxes spawn because they are trying to discredit ideas.
Right.
So they're like, let's build a hoax because that way we can discredit this movement that, you know, that there is extraterrestrial research and that we're doing these things. But if we make it a hoax and we make sure that it comes out as a hoax, you know, then the next time nobody's going to buy it.
Right.
I don't believe in conspiracy theories.
Not at all. Not even a little.
I don't sit in my room with a tinfoil hat on, I swear.
Sounds fake, but okay.
Do you use the heavy-duty tinfoil? I hear it works better.
No, I just use Reynolds wrap, but I always make sure that the shiny side is facing out because it reflects waves better.
Ah, okay. That's what I'm doing now.
Yep.
It's all about the technique.
It's all about the technique. You gotta spiral it just right, though. It's about the twist.
So, and one of the other ones that I've always been fascinated actually is quite true, and it helped spawn a lot of conspiracy theories all on its own, and started off right after World War II, or actually kind of like right at the end of World War II before it completely ended, but it was called Operation Overcast, and it eventually became Operation Paperclip, which most people have heard of Paperclip. Some people haven't heard of Overcast, which was the initial program. And basically, it was stealing Nazi scientists to bring them over to the U.S. to work for us.
Yeah, which is so cool. I mean, not
the Nazi part.
Not the Nazi part. But I mean, I love when conspiracy theories end up being true.
Yeah, there was a secret document that circulated that President Truman approved when it became Paperclip. And we pretty much, the wording on this is absolutely just lovely, to gather German scientists under temporary limited military custody.
Temporary limited military custody.
And Truman had actually approved it to, he'd expanded the number that they were going to collect under this temporary custody to 1,000 scientists. We actually collected 1,600. And Truman had approved Operation Paperclip, stating that those scientists could not be active members of the Nazi Party. And several of the military custody people decided just to kind of ignore that part. So here's where it gets really interesting. Do you know who the first NASA head was?
No,
I don't.
What was it? Somebody from Operation Paperclip?
It was indeed.
Interesting.
So two of the people that were brought over were Wernher von Braun, and he helped build the V2 rocket, which would eventually become the Saturn V, which is what Apollo used to get to the moon. But Kurt Heinrich Debus ended up being the first director of the NASA Launch Ops Center. And do you want to know what he was before that?
I mean, I'm afraid, but yes. Tell me.
SS.
Of course he was.
Yikes.
Yikes. I mean, there's that unfortunate mentality in, excuse you, Cricket, in governments and, you know, wartime and all of that, that, you know, the ends usually justify the means, and why get rid of talent when you can use it?
Exactly.
Regardless of their moral standings or anything else.
Anyway. Yeah. So of course, the conspiracy surrounding the operation was that there were high-ranking, that basically that we had kidnapped high-ranking Nazi officials and scientists to do this, and that like spun around for a while, and they had actually done such a good job at destroying documents proving, you know, that would have proved that these people were, should probably have possibly maybe been
tried for war crimes.
Yeah. that Debus actually like won a lot of awards from not just from our country but from other countries before it kind of like came out that,
oh wow,
yeah.
Oof.
So interesting, true conspiracy theory. Nazis in space.
Nazis in space. There's a secret Nazi movement. Sorry, that's not confirmed. Jumping ahead.
Yeah.
Is Travis fighting the Nazis for?
Oh, Travis, are you fighting the Nazis on the moon base, or are you just like slowly sabotaging them by stealing all their soup?
You know, yeah, you build a big fence and you hope that they're not really tall.
That's fair.
That's fair. We were talking the other day, maybe some of them are allergic to moon dust.
Oh yeah, I read somewhere that somebody who had been involved in the whole moon thing was turned out to be allergic to moon dust. Which, yeah. What an unfortunate thing to find out.
How awful would that be to get on a spaceship? You've trained for hundreds and thousands of hours to do this, and you get to the moon and you're allergic to the moon. You must have pissed Artemis off in another life, that's what I'm saying.
And while it wasn't a base on the moon, the Saturn V and Von Braun also were responsible for launching Skylab, which was the first American space station.
Huh. Oh, interesting.
Sorry, my pets are very jingly right now.
They're all very excitable.
they're
all... Like, where's the tinfoil hat?
I don't know. They're all so lazy until I start recording, and then they're like, we must move.
I want to be all up in your business. I must.
So, weird space stuff. Going back to secret satellites.
Oh boy.
One of my absolute favorite Earth-orbiting conspiracy theories is the Black Knight satellite. Ooh. And that is a conspiracy theory that came about in 1998 when a photo was taken by the STS-88 mission. It's cataloged as space debris, and it's a near-polar orbiting object. So it's orbiting close to one of the poles, and I don't remember which one, and I should have written that down, but I didn't. And the picture that they have is very far away from this object, but it looks like an alien spacecraft. Like, the shape of it is all hard lines and edges, and it's not easily identifiable as anything that you could be like, oh yeah, that's just X part of a spaceship or Y part of a spaceship. And so the photo immediately sparked all of these retroactive conspiracy theories. Almost as soon as it was posted, they started attributing other things to this satellite from an 1899 recording, or not recording, but phenomena that Nikola Tesla found, which was these repeating sources that he was picking up when he was recording radio waves from space.
Gotta love Tesla. He's the best.
Nikola Tesla. 1928, Jørgen Hals from Norway picked up long delay echoes, which is basically where you send something to space and it shouldn't come back to you, but it does. So it's basically like you send it and then a few minutes later it comes back. Like it's bounced off of an object that it shouldn't be bouncing off of. They've...
Space whales?
Space whales. They're pretty...
I mean, they're large objects.
They're pretty sure that the repeating sources and the long delay echoes are actually attributed to pulsars now. Like in modern day, that's kind of what pulsars sound like when you're picking them up on recordings.
Oh, okay.
But that hasn't stopped people from being like, no, it's bouncing off of this satellite. It's an extraterrestrial satellite that they claim has been in orbit around the pole for the last 13,000 years.
Man.
There's a bunch of, like, you know, they have stuff from ancient times where people claim to see stuff in the sky that they attribute to this satellite, even though there's obviously no proof of it. There was kind of like the conspiracy you were talking about earlier, how it was kind of like a political, not a political stunt, but like a stunt conspiracy, more or less.
Right.
In 1954, a man named Donald Keyhole told newspapers that the U.S. Air Force had reported two satellites orbiting Earth.
A weather balloon.
Well, this has been thrown into a lot of suspicion because he was actively promoting a book about UFOs at the time.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so it's thrown a lot of doubt. Again, hasn't stopped people from attributing that to the Black Knight satellite. So people have been grabbing stuff literally from all over history going, well, this is what this thing is. This is what this thing is. In 1960, Time reported that the U.S. Navy detected a dark object they thought was a Soviet spy satellite.
In Soviet Russia, it's space explored you.
But they later confirmed that it was just the remains of the Discover 8 satellite that had just blown off course.
Oh, okay.
And then one of the most attributed incidents for the Black Knight satellite has been this report that in 1963, an astronaut named Gordon Cooper, who was on his 15th orbit in the Mercury 9, reported a UFO sighting while he was in space.
Oh, cool.
Oh, I think I heard of that one.
They claim that even the like NASA tracking stuff saw the object, like it was confirmed and all of that stuff. However, neither the official NASA transcripts or Cooper's personal copies show that there was any report made during his orbit. It was something that came after he landed. So, you know, grain of salt. But then again, government cover up.
Right?
So people that believe in the Black Knight satellite believe that it's been around for a very, very long time and that the government has just been consistently covering it up, saying that it's not actually a thing. The official statement from NASA is that it was a thermal blanket lost during a space mission. I forget which space mission it was, but they actually have a record of the thermal blanket stripping off of the shuttle, and that it's just, you know, space has no gravity, so the blanket is just morphed into this weird shape as it's floating in the atmosphere. So that's the official statement of what it is, but I will put up a picture of it because it looks so creepy. Just the Earth as the background, the void of space, and then there is this unidentifiable object just hovering above the Earth. There are many, many satellites that orbit the Earth, not information satellites, but debris and space junk and things. And there's been quite a few instances of astronauts seeing these things and not being able to identify them, not being able to know what they are. And from a massive distance, it's hard to... In space, there is no reference points. It is hard to say if something is very large and very far away from you, or fairly small and very close to you. So take that as you will, but the Black Knight satellite is one of my favorite pieces of space conspiracy.
My vote is lizard people.
Lizard people! They're coming for us. Hey, Hal.
Yes?
You want to tell us about some space stuff that you know about?
Sure, I'll talk about some space stuff. Just been sitting over here and not contributing a whole ton, so I should probably say some stuff. So, Planet Nine.
Ooh, Planet Nine.
Love Planet Nine.
Yep. So I actually was perusing Wikipedia earlier to try to find the first known listing for information regarding Planet Nine, which there's kind of a whole soup of information to go through. But basically, after the discovery of Neptune, everyone was like, no, we're pretty sure there's more stuff out there. It's probably like another big planet. We don't know. And then they found Pluto, and they were like, no, this is way too small. This is, like, exceptionally way too small, and we think there's other stuff out there. Doesn't
Pluto help. Is a planet. I just want to state that right now.
It even loves us. It has a heart. It belongs in the solar system. Leave Pluto alone.
Pluto will always be a planet. I remember them changing that classification in, like, I can't remember if I was elementary or middle school by that point. I don't know.
I don't care. It's a planet.
Yes, that will eternally be a planet to me. I don't care. But
this Planet Nine is a different planet.
Yes. This isn't the ninth planet in the solar system. This is Planet Nine.
Planet Nine.
It is a different beast.
And initially, they had it named Planet X, I guess, because of information and a theory purported by somebody else. I cannot remember his name off the top of my head. I can't find it in this article. From what I gathered, due to movement of certain bodies within, like, the Kuiper Belt and some other areas of our, like, outer solar system, researchers were fairly certain that there had to be another fairly large planet. Like, they were theorizing about 5 to 10 times bigger than Earth in order to be able to, like, affect
the gravitational all of these, like, poles and
asteroids
stuff.
And everything. Yeah, because a lot of them have really weird elliptical orbits and a bunch of other stuff. And so they've been looking for this, and as of, according to Wikipedia, as of May, what is it, 22nd, there have been no official sightings. Now, there are some different theories as to what's actually going on with that, including, let's see here.
I think one of my favorite theories about Planet Nine is the fact that it actually is not a planet that belongs to our solar system. It was a rogue planet that we captured from another star.
It had a
distant orbit, and it was just kind of pulled into the orbit it's in now. I just like that idea that it's a little rogue planet from some other star.
It's fun, yeah. One theory against this is to try to, you know, explain why all that is still a thing that people consider to be possible, is I don't think that sentence made any sense, but I tried. Anyway.
Words are so hard.
Words are very hard.
We are in the wrong industry.
I can't make the words happen good, but I sure do try. One of the possible explanations for this is that Neptune, So apparently Neptune had started out much closer to the sun in terms of orbit and such, and had the movement of that planet out to its position currently could explain some of the elliptical orbits of the bodies in the Kuiper Belt that have like such weird orbits and shapes and everything else. But, you know, that's just one theory. And honestly, the little rogue planet one is also very fun.
I like the little rogue planet.
It's pretty great. I like it.
I think we should rename Planet X Rogue One.
Right?
I dig it.
Or even Rogue 9, Rogue X, I don't care.
Yeah.
I just love the idea that we just kind of like drove by and stole a planet.
We just pulled in. We're like, get in. We're going to Disneyland. And then just,
right.
Yep, pretty much.
Pluto was like, please, I need a friend. Nobody talks to me anymore.
Give me buddies. Now, admittedly, too, a lot of the basis for the Planet Nine stuff is based on much older observations. And to be clear, too, a lot of the different, like, I can't think of words, asteroids and such. They're very, very hard to observe properly with the elliptical orbits that they have, because oftentimes they're only visible during very certain times of year. And so it's really, really easy to get super inaccurate readings of their orbital patterns, which can lead to a lot of really, really weird math, which can very easily throw a lot of calculations way out of whack. Which,
I mean, because when you're dealing with magnitudes that you deal with in relation to planets in space, a very small miscalculation in numbers can equate to hundreds of light years worth of movement.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, I mean, and you have to think about it. Like, so NEO-wise, I don't know if you guys were watching the comet that came through not too long ago. Like, we don't expect that one to come back for 6,800 years. So, like, some of these have really long orbits.
Yep, exactly. And a lot of the difficulties with observing those, too, is not only are they often only visible during certain times of year, depending on their orbital patterns, they also don't give off any light of their own. So everything they get is from the sun, which makes it even harder, because, once again, certain times of year, the difficulty with distance, because, I mean, even just a short distance further out, and it gets many, many magnitudes of times more difficult to see them at all.
Yeah.
With the reduction in visible light bouncing off their surfaces. And now, I mean, a lot of these have some level of ice on them, or incorporated into them as well. But
even
not
ice can
really
only
help.
Reflect so much.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
You have
yeah.
to have light to reflect, even
yeah.
if you are made purely of ice.
Yep.
I have
yeah.
seen ice in a dark room.
Yeah. So it's it's not easy to... They have a lot of... I was reading about some of the newer systems they have for predicting and building up possible orbital patterns for these based on the observations that we've got that are a lot more accurate now than they used to be. And that is, scientists have been using that to add some further weight against the possible actuality of Planet Nine. But it's still an excellent idea, and I really like the idea of there just being some big, massive, dark planet just out on the further reaches past, like, Pluto or whatever. That's just kind of messing things up in terms of,
what if
you know.
Planet Nine is actually, like, an alien satellite base?
Ooh, I could dig it. That'd be cool.
Like, massive enough, like, Death Star massive, so that
right,
it's,
yeah. That's no moon.
That is no moon.
I mean, there's also secretly the theory that one of, I think it's one of Saturn's moons. I can't remember which one it is.
Is it Io?
No, it's, oh, it's been way too
oh,
long
the since. Death Star moon?
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. So there's some people who think that might be the Death Star, because it's got, like, some Death Star vibes to, you know, some of the imaging we have of it.
I, for one, welcome our extraterrestrial overlords in this time of chaos.
Please
right?
save us. Oh, my God.
If you're tuning in from outer space, help.
Yeah. And you know, with as far as exploration and finding planets and stuff like that, it's like Neptune was discovered in like 1846, 1850, somewhere around there. We didn't discover Pluto until 1930, and they had been looking since they discovered Neptune. So just, I mean, it's like you got to think about stuff like that. It's way out there.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it still is absolutely amazing to me that I learned some of the observational techniques that they use to determine stuff like this, but finding other solar systems with like Earth-like planets, and I mean, just the fact that we're able to determine the general like matter states of different
planets.
Yeah,
like using the wavelengths of light, like when the planets cross in front of other stars, like, really.
Yeah, it affects, like, the light and stuff like that, and it's been a long time, but yeah, there's so much that goes into it, and the science is super fascinating. I used to want to be an astrobiologist, so this is, like, the stuff I wanted to do. This is what I wanted to do. This is the neatest stuff ever, but I don't remember a lot of the details, because it's been, like, 6 or 7 years since I've taken
an astronomy
class.
It's been quite a few years since I've taken any kind of astronomy class. However, for any of our listeners that are local, I mean, obviously, with the COVID-19 shutdown and everything happening, you can't go right now, but the Columbia Basin College has a really amazing planetarium that you
Yeah, their telescope is awesome.
Can confirm.
Yes.
It was, like, my favorite class that I took there.
I would highly... And it is open for the public for viewing stuff. Not right now, but normally it is open for the public for a pretty cheap... I think it's, like, an $8 admission fee.
Yeah, yeah, it's really inexpensive.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you love space as much as we love space, I am not being paid to say this. I just think you should go look through a telescope.
I mean, yeah. If you're interested in taking classes at all, they have a two-part class series on astronomy. I was lucky enough to be able to take the first class, and it was a blast. I just like playing with telescopes.
Dude, somebody needs to make an astronomy conspiracy class, because I would take that.
Oh, that would be so absolutely fun.
Like, how cool would that be? Just be like, come and learn about space conspiracies, and we'll tell you you're wrong, but we'll teach you
it. But we'll have a good time doing it.
We'll have a good time doing it.
Yeah, one of the other cool things they do there as part of their like community outreach, and you don't have to be taking classes at CBC to do it. Normally, when it's not COVID time, they actually have classes on how to take space photography. So you can hook your computer or hook your camera up to their lens, and you can take pictures of the moon and fun stuff like that.
Which is so cool.
Well worth it.
That is not something I was aware of.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do it a couple of times a year. It's not that bad. I want to say, like, the short class that just does the moon, I want to say it was, like, $35. And I think the bigger class was, like, 80-something, but well worth it.
That's rad. That's super cool.
So cool. I mean,
I actually got to see the big telescope they have out in the observatory at one point. Only got to see it once, but, oh, super cool. They were actually, like, using it for specific observational research the day that we got to go in and see it. It was so neat.
Nice.
So neat. I love space.
I love space.
Not being paid to plug them either, but when things open back up here locally, there's also LIGO, which is, they study the magnetic stuff and sciencey things, which also help with some space research. So they have a really cool tour too.
That's so cool. I didn't know that they were out here.
Dang, yeah.
Yeah. So we did not create a black hole. Yay. But LIGO is still open. I don't think they're doing the particle accelerator, that particular part of the research anymore. I could be wrong, though. I mean, I don't know. They've been shut down for a while.
The Large Hadron Collider threw us into an alternate timeline, confirmed. But anyway, so it's only a matter of time before somebody creates a black hole that swallows the Earth.
But yeah, for those that don't know, LIGO is the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory. Caltech and MIT are the ones who are running it, but we have our very own little LIGO Hanford here. So you don't have to travel very far. It's local.
That's a really cool.
We have so much cool sciencey stuff here.
We really do. Oh my gosh.
They've actually been studying quantum fluctuations lately. That was one of their latest projects. They started that in June-ish.
Ooh.
Whatever happened to dark matter?
Oh, I was actually looking at a thing the other day regarding that. I don't remember why, but I stumbled across an article talking about dark matter versus antimatter in regards to, like,
because I remember it was like 6, 7, 8 years ago, it was a huge thing. Nobody would shut up about it. And I haven't heard, like, anything about it.
Let me... one of them is theoretical, and the other has been... Oh, let me look. I will be on pause for just a moment. I'm going to go look this up.
I mean, so for a while in the scientific community, that was... I believe at one point they had a theory about dark matter in regards to Planet Nine, like, they were like, well, it could just be a mass of dark matter outside the solar system pulling on things and causing things to be weird. Or it could be this extra body of solar body, but why? Or like, why do planets stay apart when the gravitational fields try and pull them together? It's a very interesting theory.
Yeah, unfortunately, not something I really kept up with. I mean, when they announced that quarks existed, I got really interested for a little while, and then I just kind of fell right back off. It's so much science.
Okay, so per this, it's a different article, but still in relation to the same stuff. Dark matter is the one that is theorized to make up about 80% of the material universe. However, that one is theoretical. It has not been proven yet. We haven't been able to, like, directly observe and be like, yes, this is a thing. Antimatter is actually, like, lab studyable, but it's super rare. So that one is also difficult to observe just because it's hard to find, I guess. But yeah, this was, I had some interest in this kind of stuff because for a really long time I was kind of studying, like, the bare bones basics of, like, quantum theory related stuff a couple years ago, just because I thought it was really interesting. I had done a bunch of research and digging into light spectrum stuff, which led me into a lot of the weird ways that like photons react in regards to quantum physics and all that jazz. It was really, really fascinating. And so that tended to overlap a lot of times with certain stuff relating to theories about like dark matter and antimatter and stuff like that. I'm not saying I actually really understand any of it, but it's fun to read about.
I understand very little about most science that I am very interested in. I'm just like, yes, interesting. I couldn't tell you how it works, but there is a thing.
I don't know what any of this is, but this is what it tells me.
What I'm saying is if I was a character in a sci-fi novel, I'd be the one that's like, lasers! Pew, pew, pew!
So going into using science to debunk things, I was going to bring us around to the face on Mars. Hal, if you've got something else, by all means, finish up.
That's good. I was literally just going to ramble a little bit more about quantum mechanics, but we can be done with that.
The face on Mars, the pyramid on Mars, and then there was like bases on the moon as well that people theorized about.
Yeah. I've watched several documentaries about them. I've watched some.
Dude, the face on Mars is so interesting to me.
It is. Obviously, for people who don't know, I'm not sure what rock you lived under, but the Viking 1 spacecraft, it was about 25 years ago, snapped a photo of Mars while it was going around the planet, and we got a really large rock formation that looks like a human face.
It's fascinating to me from, like, I am not a psychologist by any means, but I did take some psychology courses, and the phenomenon of facial pattern recognition in humans is fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is one of the best examples of that. I mean, besides like Jesus in toast and things like that on a mass scale that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Because if you give a human a blank surface with texture, the likelihood that they are going to be able to pull out faces from it is very high.
Yeah. I never wrote, I never ended up doing any official papers on it, but for the period of time when I was taking, like, purely just psychology-based classes, I did read up on a bunch of that kind of stuff, and it's...
Well, and
humans are very, very good at that.
There's a lot of theories behind it, and part of it is the survival instinct from, you know, back in the day. When, if you were walking through the forest and you weren't able to pick out the face of either a predator or an enemy, you were gonna die. And so being able to recognize faces in semi-random patterns was super beneficial for us, and it is something that is a holdover from that.
Mm-hmm. I've seen eyesight described in regards to the first thing that you recognize is movement and then silhouette. And so facial recognition would come in within that secondary subset. So before you even get to like color analysis or anything else, that's the secondary thing that you see beyond just base movement.
Yeah.
So,
well, and your brain is wired to create order out of chaos. So if you're looking at something that doesn't make sense to your brain, patterns are the first thing that your brain is going to do, and familiar patterns to humans are faces.
Humans don't like entropy. Yes.
Humans do not like
really don't like entropy. Really good at causing it. But
so the face on Mars, though, going back to that. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, because those are all things that the scientists brought up. One of the things that kept it in the media and in people's minds so much was that several individuals had done comparison studies for the face once we figured out like size and scale and things like that with the face on the Sphinx and several other pharaohs' faces. And there were several things that matched up. So NASA actually spent the money. One of the chief scientists for the Mars exploration, because you have to remember the very first photo was 1976.
Yeah.
So the chief scientist for NASA's Mars exploration said that we needed, that he felt that this was important to taxpayers. So we should photograph the face, which was on the mesa in, I think, Cydonia is what that section of Mars is called.
I believe so.
For on the next several Mars missions to confirm or deny this. And they did. They did it again in 1998, and that still didn't debunk it well enough when that was the Mars Global Surveyor. And then so they did it again in 2001, which finally revealed that it was just a natural formation. You could see cracks and stuff and no face.
Yeah.
So by 2001, we guaranteed, nope, not a face, not a pharaoh, not a statue, not aliens.
Which hardcore conspiracy theorists will still claim that that was a photograph from a different area on Mars that
yes.
they were using to try and discredit it. Because, you know, the government wants to cover up the fact that there was life on Mars. Oh my God, Buster, you are so jingly. Do you have coins in your pocket? You good? Sorry.
but we did pay, I mean, we did spend a fair amount of taxpayer dollars flying by that thing, which was relatively hard to find, according to the scientists. Cydonia is littered with mesas, so finding the exact one that looked like the face could be fairly difficult for them. So, and again, a lot of the naysayers who say it is an actual, like a broken statue or some such thing, claim that because it wasn't filmed at the exact same degree as the initial one, as the initial photo, is why you can't tell. There are also some theories that the frequent sandstorms also have worn it down to the point that it doesn't, or have covered it up. Both of those are theories, which is why we can't see the face very well anymore.
I mean, I guess.
Guys, humans are super good at recognizing faces, and we got extraordinarily lucky with the angle of that first shot, is what I'm saying.
With weird photos from Mars, though, there was one that was circulating the internet a couple years ago that the Mars rover took of this wall, and I don't remember if you guys remember it, but it looks like there is water, but it also looks like there's a giant, like, spider crab creature, like, clinging to the side of the wall.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that, yeah.
Oh, my God. That one skeeved me out so bad. Because it does look like a bug. It's a rock formation. They took more, they like, zoomed in on it and rolled closer and took more pictures. But still, I mean, you can't convince conspiracy theorists.
No, we're not going to have a chance on Perseverance, the Mars rover that they just launched, because it's going to a totally different area. They have no plans at this point they debunked it in 2001, so they have no plans to attempt to photograph it again.
Yeah, which, if, for those of you listening at home who didn't know, this whole episode was sparked because of the launch of Perseverance and a couple other space missions that are happening this year and actually right now. Perseverance, I believe, launched on the 31st.
On the 30th, 31st, right around there.
30th, 31st, yeah.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
Stuff. Very exciting. Sorry. I love space.
30th. Yes, it was 30th.
Stuff
sorry.
Like that.
I think it's great. My favorite thing about Perseverance, if you guys haven't heard, so the laser spectrometer, I think it is. Anyway, one of the analysis lasers that's on it is named Sherlock, and his companion camera is Watson.
I love some of the naming stuff that NASA has done. There was one involving something that they sent out past Jupiter relating to mythology with the naming of that person.
It was
something like
Juno.
That.
It was to go. They. I believe it was Juno. The probe that they sent. The satellite was Juno, and it was to visit one of Jupiter's moons, which is named after one of his affairs. And Juno is the name of his wife.
Yes, that was it. I couldn't remember all of the exact details. But that I think about that one all the time.
Yeah, it's really remember. I don't think it's Europa.
No.
But it's one of the moons that's named after one of Jupiter's mistresses in Roman mythology, and they, so they sent his wife.
Right?
I love that. So much fun.
I mean, speaking of Europa, though, there's definitely life on Europa. Nobody can convince me otherwise. It is a liquid water moon covered by a giant layer of ice. There has to be life in that planet.
The oceans of that are so deep compared to ours, guys. It's insane.
Like, no one will ever... That is a conspiracy theory that I... That's the hill I will die on. Like, scientists could send a probe to delve the entire ocean of Europa, come back and say there is no microbial life on Europa, and I would call them liars.
To reference my interest in astrobiology, one of the reasons why they do so much studying of extremophiles on Earth is because that's such a good potential basis for finding life adapted on other planets. And Europa was one of the ones they talk about very seriously in regards to, like, deep sea life.
Yeah. Speaking of astrobiology, can we just all give a big middle finger to Elon Musk for launching a car into space and literally destroying any integrity that we ever have on astrobiology from here until the end of time?
Because who knows where the possible contaminants from that thing are going to end up.
Because you know that they did not sterilize that car before they launched it into space.
I don't know that that necessarily is going to matter in the future. Do you know what Perseverance is supposed to be doing?
Please tell me.
So it's going to the Jezero crater because we believe that at one time that area had water. And it's going to be taking a whole bunch of core samples with now at least NASA, thank you NASA, the tube has been sanitized. It has no microbes from Earth.
Good, okay.
So they will be drilling core samples. It will be filling tubes and then it doesn't have any way to get back to us. So it's going to be caching the tubes. But the idea is on a future Mars mission that we will bring those core samples back to Earth.
Okay. Now, admittedly,
hopefully with Martian microbes.
You know, Joy, you are a Doctor Who fan like me. The idea of water on Mars scares me so badly.
Yeah.
Ever since that Doctor Who episode, I am like constantly like, please don't let us find water on Mars. Don't do it. Let's not do it. Like, let's just leave it alone.
You know, I think that might be one of the episodes I actually did see. I haven't seen many of them, but I think I know which one you're talking
about. It's terrifying. Yeah. They turn into weird.
Yeah. That was
zombie creatures or something.
Yeah, but that is what Perseverance is supposed to be doing. We're going to attempt to see if we can find any chemical traces of ancient life, and then we are going to take samples, and then those samples will eventually be picked up. One of the other cool things about Mars, this particular Mars rover, is that all of the rovers previous to this have had, they all have basically things on them that we already know the signatures for, so that we can calibrate the different instruments. It's been stuff like a copper penny, fairly simple stuff. This time, they actually decided to send a piece of Mars back to Mars. So one of the calibration items in the rover is part of a Martian meteor that hit here.
Oh,
interesting.
Neat.
Man, I thought it was kind of fun.
Can you imagine how wild it would be, like, if civilization as we know it got wiped out, and then, like, 3,000 years in the future, somebody went to Mars and found robots on Mars?
Right.
Without knowing any of the history of how they got there, and they were like, oh my god, there was life on Mars! There's robots!
Right, yeah, because with this one, we actually, we sent Perseverance, and Perseverance had, I don't remember the name of the little guy, but he actually has a solar-operated helicopter, too.
Oh my god, he's got a little helicopter!
So we sent a drone, too, this time around.
Got a buddy.
He's got a friend! Does that mean that they won't have to sing happy birthday to themselves every year? They can sing it together?
Hopefully, that's what I'm hoping. They're obviously, with storms and stuff, they're not sure how long it's gonna last, but we've got hopes.
We have high hopes. It is amazing to me how attached we all get to our little space robot friends. We are the weirdest pack mentality creatures ever.
I was going to say, humans will pack bond with anything. Excellent. I love it.
So I see, I expect some future conspiracies to come out of all of this, because obviously, you know, we're going to be taking samples and hermetically sealing them and then caching them on Mars somewhere and then eventually picking them up. But are we going to pick up the good ones, or are we going to pick up the ones that say what we want them to say?
I'm sure conspiracy theorists will let us know.
I mean, the short answer is it depends on whether or not it coalesces with what the conspiracy theorists believe.
True.
Because at the end of the day, you know, like we said, no matter the evidence presented, you can't convince a conspiracy theorist that they're wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, moon landing was faked.
You believe in the moon.
Right. Well, we better believe in the moon, because the next thing that NASA's working towards is Artemis, which is we're sending a woman and some men to the moon by 2024.
Nice. Like moon colony, or just another lunar mission?
So this one's going to be a lunar mission. The idea is by 2028 to establish sustainable missions and a possible launch pad of some form on the moon so that we can take the next leap to send astronauts to Mars.
Nice.
That's really exciting.
I really want to live on the moon, but I'm pretty sure that I would end up being that poor guy that is allergic to the moon.
Right.
Because so I'm allergic to everything, so I'm probably also allergic to the moon.
Yeah. So the first commercial moon flight for the deliveries to help, I guess, stock up on the moon for this stuff actually starts next year.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Go us. I mean, the unfortunate truth is our planet is not indefinite, so finding viable ways to exist off of our planet is the best course of action we have right now. And that's not to say that it's going to happen anytime soon. It definitely could, but moving to space.
I want to see camping on the moon. I wish to go camping on the moon.
I want to go
the
camping.
Most expensive
camping. It's just one of these, like little
moon resort
bubbles.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like the little dome bubble things. Yeah. I really want to live on one of Saturn's moons. Like,
there's some cool ones.
Like, I want to live there because I want nothing more in my life than to wake up in the morning and just have Saturn as my view.
Like legit, that would be cool. Like sci-fi view of just like that planet taking up like 3/4 of the sky. Like,
yeah, yes, awesome.
I love those shots.
That's where I want to live.
So the first item that they're taking bids for right now from the different commercial partners is called Prime One. It's a polar resources ice mining experimental drill. They actually want to go to the moon and drill it and then see how much water beneath the surface is ice and how much of it is vapor.
They're going to run into the Nazi base because the moon is hollow, guys.
I just figured I would give Travis a heads up so that he can move his space whale.
I'm sorry, the chuckle just got me.
I feel like there was something I was reading a little while ago regarding sending drilling supplies to Europa for water sample testing.
There,
but I might be wrong on
there
that.
There has been a lot of talk about that. We don't quite have the like reliable enough technology to quite do it yet.
No, that's fair. I thought I saw something where they had like been working to confirm one, but I might be wrong.
I mean, we kind of defunded NASA for a bit, so
that doesn't help.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
You know
what's crazy, guys, is before I realized I probably wouldn't get accepted for, you know, my eyesight and general physical health, I really wanted to be an astronaut. Like, that was my actual goal. I was going to be an astronaut.
You just need millions of dollars.
I'll build my own spaceship. It's fine.
We'll build our own spaceship with
blackjack. I mean, Russia's taken a lot of people up who probably wouldn't otherwise get up there.
So I will move to Russia if I can live on the moon.
I don't think I don't think Russia would like me either. That's the problem.
That's possible.
I'm pretty sure that trying to move to Russia would get me immediately executed. I've shared enough memes about, you know, the dude.
The dude. Let's just keep things vague.
I'm pretty sure.
Just tell them you know where all the American number stations are, and that you'll give them to them if they just let you stay there.
I can confirm a secret moon base.
Just give them
I know about
Travis's phone number. It's fine.
We have a potential contact for you on.
So do you guys have anything else?
Sorry, I got really excited because I just remembered a thing that I learned the other day that I was talking to you about.
Go, enlighten us.
So, I don't remember if we actually studied this in my astronomy class, because for some reason this is the one bit of information that completely failed to stick. But in regards to, like, our solar system specifically, but also just in general, the sun is not the exact center of the solar system. This is not a conspiracy theory. I just thought this was really cool and I get excited about space things. But there's this thing called the barycenter, which is basically like it's the center of mass of every like object in the solar system combined. Now, for our solar system, the sun overlaps with that like fairly consistently, but it basically does this weird little like loop-de-loop thing right around that point. There are other solar systems and other like two or more like bodies orbiting each other where that barycenter doesn't overlap with anything. I just thought it was neat though. You can see there's NASA. It's admittedly on like the kids section of NASA, but they have a really good explanation right. for like what it is, and they've got some super super cool little like simulated pieces, so you can actually see how the barycenter like where that is in balance with the rest of the bodies in the system that they're talking about. It's super neat. So that's the thing that I don't remember if I'd actually learned that before, but if I did, I forgot it and then relearned it again, and it was really cool. I love finding stuff like that. Random fun fact of the day.
I love that. Barycenters, because everyone thinks of the sun as the actual middle point of our solar system and doesn't realize the sun actually does rotate on a wobble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The space is
unless you still are stuck in the idea that the Earth is the center of the solar system, of our
The Earth is flat, the sun system. Isn't real.
Right?
You know. And there are people that think that Mars is the same size as the moon, and I have been flabbergasted by that for a solid week now.
The truth of the matter is, there is so many space conspiracies that we could probably revisit this topic four or five times and not even scratch the surface.
Yeah.
But I think we're running out of time for tonight. As much as I want to just keep talking about this,
we're having way too much fun.
So before the government actually locks onto our location and silences us for our revealing of the truth, we should probably log off. So, as always, listeners, thank you for tuning into the Underground Files. We appreciate your support. Have a great night, and stay weird.
You've been listening to AU Radio Underground Files. Music is provided by Cubby, PurplePlanet.com, and Bensound.com. Views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Adventures Underground. AU Radio Podcast is a production of Adventures Underground, copyright 2018, all rights reserved.
If you'd like to contact the show, follow us on Twitter at @AU_radio, Facebook at AU Radio Podcast, Instagram at AU.radio, or you can email the show at podcast@advunderground.com. You can also support this show and all the shows on AU Radio by becoming a patron of the AU Radio Network. Find us on Patreon as AU Radio at Adventures Underground. You can help us create this podcast and soon several others with as little as a dollar a month. Thanks for listening.